order. I'd ask that you all rise and
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you'd call the roll, please.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Ms. Danner?
Here.
Mr. Dipto?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Stone? Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Patillo?
Here.
Quorum.
We move next to special orders of business. We have one matter that does not appear on the agenda tonight, primarily intended to be a surprise. One of the less heralded but very important functions of the Alaska Municipal League has been the AML investment pool. And for members of the public who are not familiar with the investment pool, it is a mechanism by which local governments, school districts, municipalities, and other governmental entities within the state may aggregate their money so that investments may be made in a way that is both prudent and hopefully rich in return. And that investment pool is managed by a board of directors made up of experts from around the state. One of them who has dedicated many years on the board is Craig Duncan. At the annual meeting of the Municipal League, Craig was provisionally honored for his years of service. I would like to call on Kathy Wasserman, the executive director of AML, to make a direct presentation.
Thank you. I'll let you stand up, Craig. When you get long in the tooth and have to retire, but Craig is not long in the tooth. He's been a wonderful addition to the investment pool, and he is obviously, because of his position here, very astute and has a lot of expertise when it comes to finance, and which I am forever thankful because you would not want me managing the investment pool. But anyway, Craig, you know that we depend on you, and we may be calling you often, mm-hmm. but you've given a lot of years of service since 1994. And so on behalf of every municipality in the state, school district, and anyone else that has their money invested in the MLIP investment pool, we want to thank you for all your years of service.
Well, thank you.
And just to clarify, Craig, after these years of service, rotated off the board this year. Now, Craig, were you on the original board? You were close to it, if not from the original board, because the legislature, I think, didn't even authorize its creation until 1992.
There was an original committee that was formed, and I was on the original committee. And then I was off of it for a while. Then the legislation was formed, and I was back on.
Well, again, we're proud of you and just want to be able to say thank you again on behalf of the citizens of Juneau for your role in that as well.
Thank you.
That brings us next on our agenda to approval of the minutes of the December 19th, 2011, regular meeting 2011-29. Are there any additions or corrections, Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 5, under lands and resources, I think it should be, Chair Becker said the Lands and Resource Committee met. And then on the next page, not really necessary, but everyone else got to have liaison and their name, and I just wondered why I did it with the last one. Would you like to put it in?
If that's the request, I take it's your request.
That's my request.
Is there objection?
Thank you.
Hearing none. So, Wardy, let me ask, with those corrections, is there objection to the approval as corrected? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us to manager's request for agenda changes.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
We move next on our agenda to public participation on non-agenda items. It allows any... Excuse me.
Sorry. Attorney brought something to my attention. The red folder item should be substituted for that in your packet. It's Ordinance 2012-02, Version C.
Which will be
part
of the package of introduction tonight.
Correct.
That does then bring us to our public participation on non-agenda items. Any member of the public may address the assembly during this period of time on a matter otherwise not on the agenda. It is limited to 5 minutes, any individual speaker. We have one individual who is asked to address the assembly during this portion of the meeting, Mr. Michael Patterson. Please come forward. And I'll have you, if you would, Mr. Patterson, state your name for the record as well as your address. And
my name is Michael Patterson. I live at 326 4th Street, Apartment 202, here in Juneau. I marked the thing wrong. I should have marked it non-agenda, but I put public hearing.
You're fine.
All right. The matter that I wanted to bring before the City and Borough of Juneau is the matter of what has become the smoker's room on Front Street. Right now I'm fighting for my life. I've had the top of both lungs removed because I was a smoker all of my life. And I quit 4.5 years ago when I almost died from it, obviously. For me, smoke is deadly. It's very deadly. Anytime I walk through the streets of Juneau, I feel like I've smoked an entire cigarette because I'm walking through cloud after cloud after cloud of cigarette smoke. And because of my lung condition, I obviously cannot hold my breath while walking through downtown Juneau. I've been thinking about this and actually praying about it a lot. And it's not just me. I know there are other people that have respiratory problems that need to come down into the Juneau area in the businesses and conduct business. I also know that a lot of our own children walk through the streets of Juneau. So we're subjecting children, we're subjecting elderly people, we're subjecting people that have severe respiratory problems, such as myself, to cigarette smoke, which, you know, will lead to some really harmful things. You know, I've prayed about it, and I've talked with a lot of people about it, and some people have said, well, they're not going to do anything about this. This is too big a thing. I mean, they've already pushed them out in the streets. You know, where they're going to move them to now, you know, and I literally went into my own prayer closet, and I prayed, and I've asked, you know, what is the solution for this? And what came to my mind was that every bar, in order for it to be open, has to have a back door. And they do lead to alleyways that we have here within the city and borough. You know, it seems to me that it would be better if smoking was moved to those alleys or, you know, to the back doors of these businesses, you know, so that we're not subjecting the people, you know, that have to come downtown for business reasons to, you know, clouds of cigarette smoke. I've also, what came to my mind also was the fact that, you know, webcams are so easily accessible and usable in these days that either the businesses that are having that as a new designated smoking area could be responsible for installing webcams so that, you know, people could feel safe when they're back in these areas, you know. But, you know, I would hope and I appeal to all of your hearts, you know, about this matter that you know, that people don't have to lose their lives because the problem might be a little bit too difficult to work with. I mean, I used to feel Juneau was a relatively safe place for me. I've lived here all of my life, you know, and at this point in time, I don't feel that it's safe, and this is why I don't feel that it's safe. You know, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come down and speak to you guys from my heart about this matter, you know, and I pray and I hope that you consider this and, you know, try to find a solution that you know, will benefit everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony tonight.
Thanks.
That brings us next on our agenda to the consent agenda. Any member of the public may ask that a matter other than an ordinance for introduction be withdrawn so that testimony may be taken on that. We have in our consent agenda at this point only liquor license renewals that would be subject to public testimony. Is there any member of the public who wishes to have a matter withdrawn? Seeing that public participation is closed on that. Again, you have a proposed ordinance 2012-02 version C. And if you'd note that as we move forward to action on the consent agenda. Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the consent agenda with the changed ordinance and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next on our agenda to ordinances for public hearing. We have first before us ordinance 2011-30. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance providing for the issuance and sale of a general obligation refunding bond in the aggregate principal amount of not to exceed $6,300,000 and providing the form and terms of the bond and for unlimited tax levies to pay the bond.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would authorize the issuance of up to $6.3 million in general obligation bonds to refund the 2000B and 2002 general obligation school bonds. It's estimated that refunding these bonds will save approximately $415,000 over their five-year remaining life. The bond issuance requires assembly authorization but does not require voter approval. The final issuance of the bonds will further require an assembly resolution for the bid acceptance. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Three individuals who have asked to testify on this matter. I begin with Ms. Melanie Milhorn.
This one or next one?
I think
I'm sorry, did I?
Next one.
31.
I apologize. I show no one who is asked to sign up for this ordinance, but you're still free to testify on it. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on ordinance 2011-30? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move ordinance 2011-30 for the purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
Thank you. I actually have six and an optional seventh question. So as I move through these, if assembly members would like to interject, that's okay with me?
I'll let you.
You tell me.
You start your questions, and as it generates any other questions, I will.
Perfect.
Pass it along.
Thank you very much. Okay, so question number one, and yeah,
mostly questions better go to Craig on these.
Mostly these are questions for Mr. Duncan, for sure. Mr. Duncan, why is it $6.3 million and not $6.16 million? Is that for cost of issuance or what?
It's not to exceed, and so it will vary. The bonds could be issued at a premium or a discount, and so using that number with those terminologies provides maximum flexibility when we get ready to sell them to maximize the benefit we're going to have. And so we will only issue the bonds to the net amount needed to do the refunding.
Ms. Danner.
Okay. Section 10.6, manner of sale. I'm talking about our code, our ordinance, not this particular ordinance, but CBJ code with regard to bonds?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the right name for it, but you know what I'm talking about. It says all obligations may be sold in a manner directed or authorized by the assembly. We've chatted before about negotiated versus competitive bids, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
And can you just chat with us about that? Is this the point where the assembly determines the manner?
And I suppose if that was a direction from the assembly, I think the answer would be yes. I've had this discussion with our financial advisor, who is the person that's really charged with coming up with the most advantageous way of issuing this debt. And in our discussions the other day, originally we were talking about maybe this would need to be as a competitive sale. My discussions with them 2 days ago or 3 days ago indicated that he thinks this should be, this can go as a competitive bid, and that's the direction we will go. There's a number of issues associated with that, and we do have two more bonds that will be coming before the assembly in short order. The comment on that one is that they would probably, that they being the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, would want to integrate these in with other issues. They feel it would get so complex that they would want to actually negotiate this sale. And so I've had that discussion with them, but those are several months down the road before we move in that direction. So at this point, these would be competitive.
Great. And we do sort of take it as a case-by-case basis to decide what's the best course of action.
Yes, and I have actually asked the our financial advisor that if we need to go to a recommendation of a negotiated sale, that he provide me with written documentation as to why he feels that's in our best interest to do.
Great. Thank you. Page 9. Ooh, the top of page 9, it says the bond is not a private activity bond as such term is defined in the IRS code of 1986. The city and borough of Juneau has, and then in square brackets, not designated the bonds to be qualified tax-exempt obligations under 265B of the code. Which is it, has or has not?
I don't know the answer to that question. This is the form of the bonds, and so this is actually putting the format of how the bonds would be issued to the buyer. And at the beginning of that section, it notes that the bond shall be substantially in this form, and you notice there's a lot of blanks in there. And so we've always treated that as more, as not finite as much as it's going to be substantially this form. That question was asked earlier, and honestly, I don't know the answer when we're talking about Section 265B as how it applies to banks and thrift associations. Now, that would have to be a question I think we'd have to go back to bond counsel and talk to them about.
Okay.
Mr. Keel.
Just in follow-up, so this section is specific to banks, thrift institutions, other financial institutions, but this language doesn't leave any question in your mind that these will be tax-exempt municipals for the purpose of individual bond buyers, right?
We have been doing this for many years in this format, and it does not.
Okay.
Also, the bonds themselves, once we get the bids, they will need to come back, and whether we negotiated it or whether we did it as competitively, they would come back in a resolution form and setting the final form for this process.
Thank you.
Ms. Tanner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 10 at the top, there's a section on execution of bonds, and it talks about the city manager's signature and the clerk's signature, that the bonds aren't actually valid until they're signed. And it says that something to the effect of a facsimile signature can be used. Can you just give us some assurance as to how the security is handled on that so we know that extra bonds aren't signed?
Well, it is handled through something called DTC, and so the bonds that are issued and the money that is paid for those bonds all goes through a third-party trustee. And so it's their job of the trustee to do this matching and make sure that everything is appropriate.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Dunk, I'm sorry, I'm not aware. Who is our advisor?
The gentleman's name is Chip Pierce. He's from Western Financial Group.
And are they located?
They're in near Portland.
And excuse me. Yeah, the floor. We had a long-standing relationship with that firm.
I would say no. We have in the past used another firm, Seattle Northwest Securities. And I switched a few years ago after doing some research. There's a couple reasons that I did switch, but Western Financial is also the financial advisor for the bond bank. And so there is some gain of actually having a financial advisor that provides services in both areas.
Thank you.
Ms. Tanner.
All right. The last question I have is with regard to private person use limitations. And where is that? I think it's on page 13. It goes into great length under tax conventions, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand this private person use limitation and what they're trying to get at?
This goes back to your first comment about private activity bonds, in that when you're issuing tax-exempt financing, the IRS only allow you to do that for public purpose. And so if you're going to issue a bond where the private sector is going to benefit from the issuance of this debt, then there's restrictions that apply. And so, for example, if we were to say, issue a bond for a section of the airport, and that airport was going to be leased out to a bunch of different merchants, then that would create potential this conflict of a private activity.
Further discussion on Ordinance 2011-30. Mr. Keel.
Mr. Duncan, just to get a little clarity on some of the earlier conversation, I understand that the language here is fairly permissive and gives a fair amount of flexibility. So we've talked about the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority,
mm-hmm.
and we've talked about the possibility of structuring the sale ourselves. You're comfortable that this language gives the finance department the authority to do what is most advantageous, whether that's to go through the bond bank or to go directly through our financial advisor and place this?
Maybe a little clarification. The two choices that we would have are we would issue it directly into the market.
Mm-hmm.
We would go through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Going through the bond bank provides two benefits to the city. One is they provide an extra credit because it comes out under the state's name and they put reserves in. And they kind of add additional benefit to the investor. And two is that the bond bank picks up the vast majority of all the issuance costs. So in this particular case, we will pay for our own bond counsel, which was involved in drafting this ordinance. But the bond bank then picks up the financial advisor, the printing, and all the other costs associated with it.
Okay. Ms. Stanton.
In section 12B4, it's page 13 at the bottom, that paragraph goes into great length about Gastineau Elementary School, and I'm just not sure why.
Well, the refunding bonds, the bonds were issued for Gastineau School, so, think about it. Actually, I'd have to think about that question while I'm not sure. That I have a good answer at this particular point, that the 2000 refunding bonds, I'm just not sure. I think I'd have to go back and search the 2000 bond authorization to answer that better.
Further discussion? Mr. Keel.
I have just one more in because I'm afraid we haven't been dry enough yet. the section 10 of this ordinance, on page 11, as well as section 11, talks about defeasing bonds, and it's my understanding that this is that you and I had a conversation about this before the meeting started, but I just wanted to sort of put it on the record here. But it's my understanding that the intent is not to defease these bonds; it is to call them.
That is correct.
And to refund them that way, and so. You're comfortable that this language doesn't tie your hands into defeasing the bonds, but that in fact you will be able to do what we've intended to do. We'll be able to call the bonds and refund them that way.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
We have before us Ordinance 2011-30. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to Ordinance 2011-31. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, authorizing the issuance of a non-recourse revenue and refunding bond, Wildflower Court Incorporated Project, of the City and Borough in an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $14,200,000, authorizing the execution and delivery of the necessary financing documents in connection therewith, and providing the form and terms of the bond.
Mr. Manager.
These new bonds will result in an estimated savings of $4.2 million over the remaining life of the bonds. In addition, the new bonds will provide up to $1 million in additional funding to Wildflower Court to install a kitchen, carpeting, facility improvements, and software and hardware upgrades. The new bonds will be issued through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority to gain maximum refunding benefit, some of which Craig just described. The term of the new issue will not change. Wildflower Court is pledging its revenues to the repayment of the revenue bond debt. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Ms. Milhorn, if I could call on you now.
Short people need a little shorter stand here, so.
It'll pick you up.
Okay. Honorable Mayor Botello and distinguished assembly members, it's an honor to present testimony before you this evening. For the record, my name is Melanie Milhorn, and I reside at 17270 Andrianoff Drive. And I'm here to speak on behalf of Wildflower Court and this particular ordinance. It's been a pleasure to serve on this board for the last 5 years as a board member, and currently I am the board chair, president, excuse me. A little bit of history about Wildflower Court. It used to be named St. Anne's Care Center. It was located in Juneau's 6th Street, the old hospital, and it was constructed in the 1920s. In 1990s, it became increasingly apparent that in order to provide skilled nursing in the manner that they wanted to provide that care to residents is that the physical plant structure of the old hospital was not conducive to that type of care. And so the board and the staff pursued a certificate of need to build a new building, which was approved in 1999. In 2001, Wildflower Court requested and received the support and the assistance from the city and borough of Juneau in order to receive conduit financing. This allowed Wildflower Court to construct a new building, and they opened their doors in 2001. Wildflower Court has successfully paid on this bond for 11 years and has now reached a point where the bonds can be refinanced. We have appreciated the assistance and the support from the city and borough of Juneau, and we are again asking for your support. This refinancing would be significant to Wildflower Court. Our current interest rate is 6.875, and in today's market, that can be substantially lowered. Wildflower Court's revenues are fee-for-service from Medicaid and Medicare, which are capitated. Lowering the interest rate will allow more of the revenues to be devoted and dedicated to our residents rather than paying interest. We are also using the opportunity, as Mr. Swope talked about earlier, in order to build our own kitchen, in order to also strengthen our infrastructure for accounting software to meet the federal requirements of electronic medical records. As we know, our food preferences right now are very important to us. As we age, our food preferences are even more important to us. When residents are not able to receive the same food opportunities, including traditional foods, that is something that is a loss to them. And so having a new kitchen where we would better able to meet their needs is very, very important on our agenda. Other uses for the funding include some deferred maintenance items, which are carpeting and replacement. And if you have not visited Wildflower Court, I would invite you to do so. It is a beautiful, beautiful building, and there is a lot of love in all those four corners of that building. There's no dispute the Wildflower Court plays an active and positive role in providing health care and is a good community partner in Juneau. We help residents who are vulnerable and who have loneliness issues, and we carry out a very important mission. Without Wildflower Court, individuals would have to go to Wrangell or Petersburg or Sitka, and this would take away from their contact points with their family and their community, which are vitally important to their health and their well-being. And I would also like to say that in the 5 years' time that I've been on the board, that as evidenced by the surveys that come back from the families and the employees, that Wildflower Court is an incredible place that provides very, very good care to our residents. There's a lot of love and compassion. And I would like to especially commend Millie Duncan and Ruth Johnson for their leadership, for building such a strong team. The board members are here, and we have a wonderful board who cares very, very deeply about the mission that we have. We have approximately 107 employees who work for Wildflower Court, and the annual wages paid is $4.4 million in 2011. So we are a positive contributor. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Milhorn. Any questions from the Assembly? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I call next on Ms. Ruth Johnson.
Good evening. My name is Ruth Johnson. I think our board members will do a good job of speaking to the community benefits of our facility, and I just want to speak to you as how I came to work for Wildflower Court in 2004.
Johnson, if I might just interrupt here and just have you state your name for the record as well.
Ruth Johnson, and I reside at 5989 Sunset Street, Juneau.
Thank you.
I came to work for Wildflower Court in 2004 after 13 years in banking. So this is a little bit of a role reversal for me. I'm more used to being in your position looking at loan requests. As a commercial lender evaluating a request like this, I would take a hard look at the stability, the management, and the payment history of an organization very closely. Wildflower Court has been in operation since 1977. Our current senior managers have been in place an average of 8 years, and we have been paying agreed on this debt for over 10 years. I think that we can exhibit a great deal of stability in terms of our payment history and our organizational history. I also want to speak a little bit to risk and benefits, and maybe some financial benefits that haven't been addressed either in the ordinance or organizationally, something we have not talked about very much. This funding request, as Rod mentioned, represents more than just $4 million in savings to Wildflower Court. It also represents a significant savings to the state Medicaid program, a high priority for our governor and the state administration. All Medicaid providers have a mandate to reduce the cost of delivery. 89% of our residents are Medicaid beneficiaries. The rate we are paid for their services is based on our actual cost, including facility cost. Reducing the interest rate we pay on facility debt will result in lower Medicaid rates, which will, in the long run, save the state Medicaid program a great deal of money. And the other thing that I wanted to mention quickly from your position as basically lenders, which you already are on this debt, is I have a very close relationship with our existing bondholders. One of them, Jim Phillips, who's with Van Kampen, which is now Invesco, I spoke to almost quarterly my first few years in this job, and now we're kind of down to an annual basis where I catch them up on our financials, and they do get our census and our quarterly financials within 30 days of each quarter end, and whenever he wants, he calls and we chat about our condition, and we've often spoken about how high this interest rate is and looked at different ways to refund it, and he has always told me that he wants to be part of any refunding that we do, and he had a great deal of confidence in us enough that if this debt is refunded, he'd want to be a buyer of the future bonds, and I think to me that would provide a great deal of insurance. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. Questions, Ms. Danner?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Johnson, on page 5 of this particular ordinance, it says, when it's talking about the non-recourse nature at the end of the paragraph at the top of page 5, it says, if Wildflower Court fails to meet the debt service requirements, the state could enact the revenue intercept provisions to withhold sales payments to the CBJ, state payments to the CBJ. To protect CBJ's interest, there will be an indenture agreement that would secure the debt by a pledge of the facility. Can you give us a feel for what that means?
Basically, we already have that pledge in our existing debt. Our revenue stream is what secures the bond debt. We can't use our revenues for anything other than providing services and repaying debt. And Craig can speak to that maybe also.
There is one difference between the existing debt and the new debt, which is highlighted here in the discussion of the revenue intercept, and that the most advantageous and maybe the only way to actually issue their bonds would be to go to the city and borough. And then what's most advantageous for us is to go through the municipal bond bank, because the municipal bond bank will then add their credit and it'll go onto the street. One of the standard things that the bond bank requires is revenue intercept. And so any bonds that the city doesn't really pay that goes through the bond bank, the state has the right to withhold state payments that would be coming from the state to the city. There's no clear direction if they would do that. They've never done that. But, of course, we've never defaulted, and I don't know if anybody else has either. And when you talk to them, they're a little unsure. But I think that the issue is here that, yes, the increase in risk associated with this debt is the revenue intercept provision, and that the trust indenture means that that facility is then pledged, if they were to fail to pay the debt, that the city and borough then would become responsible, and that we would also then become, owners of the facility. And one of the important things, I think, is that a significant portion of the residents of the facility actually come from Bartlett, and so they're discharged from Bartlett. So there's this relationship to Bartlett. And there was a letter from Sean in the packet talking about what that relationship is. And so I think that's where this sort of risk issue is, that there's a little bit more risk, but there's a net benefit to the city and to the hospital. And I think, as it's been pointed out, they have been paying for 10 or 11 years. Their debt will actually go down. And so it will actually reduce the potential risk of default by the fact it will be easier to pay the debt.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Craig.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, Ms. Frieda Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. My name is Frieda Miller.
Don't worry about that. It'll pick you up.
I have a tendency to speak very softly. My name is Frieda Miller. I reside at 1283 Mendenhall Peninsula Road. I'm here on behalf of Wildflower Court. I'm a member of the Board of Directors, and I'm happy to serve in that capacity for this wonderful facility. Wildflower Court is historically, economically, socially, and psychologically integrated in our local setting. A high level of community integration is evident in that facility. Many residents are able to retain strong ties within the community through trips outside the facility, and conversely, community involvement in activities brought to the nursing home. Most important, the community integration of Wildflower Court allows residents to maintain a temporal continuity in their lives. Wildflower Court was created by a group of concerned Juneau citizens who felt that individuals in need of skilled nursing care should be allowed to remain in their home communities for as long as possible to be near their family and friends. Today, Wildflower Court continues carrying out that goal for Juneau residents. The majority of Wildflower Court's admissions are from Juneau and around the Juneau area at 81%. For those individuals who resided outside of Juneau prior to their admission to Wildflower Court, 47% of those residents had a family member living in Juneau. Since moving into the new facility in May of 2001, Wildflower Court has maintained a 98% to 99% occupancy, except for the 2 years in which beds were added. That was in 2004, where the occupancy was at 93%, and in 2008, when it was at 96%. So the occupancy, as many beds as we add, that's as many people who want to fill those beds. The number one reason why people have been admitted to Wildflower Court has been for rehabilitation services. The goal of the rehabilitation program at Wildflower Court is to provide therapeutic activities directed at reentry into familial, social, educational, and working environments, the reduction of dependence on assistive devices or services, and the general enrichment and quality of life. 55% of Wildflower residents are discharged back home. Because of the severity of some of the residents' illnesses, many of Wildflower Court's residents are considered long-term care. They will never go back to their homes, be stabilized, or recover from this illness where they can take care of themselves. It's a distinct benefit to our community that our elders are able to live out their lives within their home community, surrounded by family and friends. I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to voice my support for the adoption of this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Are there any questions? And thank you very much for your testimony. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to testify? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the approval of Ordinance 2011-31, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Duncan, did you have a comment?
And I don't mean to slow the process, but I just want to let you know that interest rates have actually moved in favor of refinancing, and so the numbers we provided have actually increased by about 10% of savings.
So unanimous consent has been requested. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We move next on our agenda to new business. We have before us the Bartlett Regional Hospital. And I note that Mr. Storr and Ms. Bominger are here. Mr. Storr.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. My name is Bob Storr. I live at 114 West 6th Street in Juneau, and I'm as of December 27th, the president of the Bartlett Regional Hospital Board, and with me is Kristen Bomagen, who's the immediate past president to the board, and we're here to discuss the proposed contract with the management company. If I may, I'll just tell you the construct of the negotiating team, and then Kristen will tell you some of the highlights of the contract. The negotiation team is comprised of four people. Kristen, who is an attorney. We had our outside counsel, Dick Monkman, and from the city attorney's office, we were assisted by Amy Meadle. And myself, the non-attorney in the group, but I've over a decade, I was in charge of negotiating contracts with some of the largest money management firms in the world, actually. So that's was my presence. And what I'd like to do is turn over to Kristen to discuss some of the details of the contract.
I don't know if I need to move a little bit closer. Okay. Mr. Mayor, Assembly members, my name is Kristen Bomingen, and I live at 5957 North Douglas Highway. This contract comes as the result of an RFP process that we engaged in through the first part of 2011. We worked with a consultant who was an expert in the healthcare industry to help us get the best developed RFP that we could to solicit bids to go on with our management services. We had been working with a healthcare management services consultant, Quorum Health Resources, for about 20 years, I think, at the time that we went out for these bids to address to develop an approach to our management system that was a little bit different. We received three bids, and we went through a very long and detailed process with them, and we decided at the end of that time that Quorum Health Resources did offer us the best options. This contract in front of you tonight, however, is a consulting services contract. Management consulting services are what we are now securing, rather than the management contract that we had before. The major difference is that the hospital board will directly hire the chief executive officer in the future, instead of that person being an employee of the health of Quorum Health Resources, and as well as the CFO, the chief financial officer will also be an employee of the hospital in this future model. So it represents a significant shift in our management design. Some of the highlights of the contract are that we will continue to engage in the to participate in the group purchasing organization that we have been engaged in for the last number of years through Quorum. That brings a tremendous benefit to the hospital in terms of getting good prices by purchasing in a large group organization. And then we've significantly improved our insurance and dispute resolution terms under this new contract. And so I don't really have any other things to address. We're here to ask for your approval of this contract so that we can proceed.
Questions from assembly members? Ms. Banner.
I just have one. With regard to the purchasing power of Quorum, are you locked into purchasing through them, or is it just, can you comment on that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Assemblymember Danner. We do not, there's an explicit exception in here that we do not exclusively have to purchase through that group purchasing organization, and we haven't in the past as well. I mean, we've had that exception incorporated into it before. Also, with our consulting services component in this contract, there is nothing that requires that we go through those services. It does spell out the relationship and the compensation that Quorum receives under the terms of the contract in the instance that we do use their services, but there's nothing that locks us in to just purchasing through them.
Thank you.
Further comments, questions? Mr. Wanamaker followed by Mr. Smith.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is this. I was wondering if you could repeat the change in the contracting services as far as management of the hospital goes. If I understood correctly, you're changing how the CFO and the CEO are selected and by whom, and the reasons for making such a significant change.
Assemblyman Wanamaker through the mayor. To just restate, the circumstances under the contract that we're under right now, the CEO and the CFO are both the employees of Quorum Health Resources. And so we've now changed it so that the board will be hiring the CEO directly, and the CFO will be engaged by our CEO with participation of the board. The one of the reasons became apparent as we started to go through the RFP process. When we got to the point of needing to know more about the operations of the hospital, more specifically in order to develop this RFP, we were confronted with the circumstance of having to go to one of the potential bidders' employees to ask for all the information we required in order to develop the RFP. And we felt that in itself created an created a conflict. We felt we needed to not work with only one of our potential bidders in that way. So that's one of a number of things we think that we we can really assure that our community will have the best control of our own hospital if we're able to directly hire and hold our CEO accountable to our board and our community.
Mr. Smith.
If it's possible to hear just a little bit more about the RFP process and what your conclusions were. I mean, you just stated very clearly the reason for this, but I want to hear just a little bit more about the RFP process. Maybe the other two bidders and what came through
yes.
on this decision.
Assemblyman Smith through the mayor. We had three bidders in the process. Peace Health was one of the organizations that bid, and Alliant Health was another organization. So we had the three come here and present their programs. And I'd say in general, it was a process that everyone engaged in, and there were many different viewpoints of what we were receiving. But the consensus at the end of our review was that Quorum Health Resources was offering us the best in the range of consulting services. And we had been satisfied to a reasonable degree with our participation in the group purchasing organization. And all of the bidders, to one degree or another, were comfortable with going to the management plan that we wanted to engage in, where we had a direct hire of the CEO. Though not all were equally enthusiastic about that approach, and so we, after our deliberations of their presentations, we decided that Quorum was still offering us the best in its range of expertise and consulting services.
If I may add a little bit to that. The process started last February, and one of the reasons we had to hire an outside consulting firm was because our experts work with a potential vendor, so we hired an outside firm to assist us in the development and educating, frankly, in the development of this RFP. It started out kind of a lengthy process, which included speaking to a number of hospitals that use both models, the one we're using now, and then the one that we're moving to, which is where senior staff report directly to the hospital board. And that due diligence took several months and was very thorough. And it was sort of in the middle of the process there was a conclusion that we thought a superior model is the one we're adopting, where the senior management is reportable directly to and accountable to the board of the hospital.
Further questions?
Ms. Becker. Mayor. Going from Quorum, who had a particular relationship with you, to the new relationship, will there be any restrictions or changes of requirements that you will have because you are changing with the same company, only having a different management style?
To the mayor, certainly member Becker, there are a number of changes in the contract. That's more of a product of negotiations. There are a couple unique facts because of it is a different relationship now. As mentioned earlier, it's not a consulting contract. The essence of what they do is still the same, with that one key piece of separation between the management team and the management company.
Yes, Assemblywoman Becker through the mayor. When I think about it, I'm not really certain there are more restrictions. I think that all of the restrictions that we see in this contract here right now are no different from what we worked under before, but because we were not aware of some of them, they've now been placed very clearly in our contract in terms of non-compete provisions of the with the employees and consultants. That was one of the things that existed, but we were not fully informed of before, and so we've come to understand our relationship a lot more clearly, so that rather than feeling it's more restrictive, I think we have a much better sense of how to proceed with this group. So
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can you talk to us a little bit about the board's plans for transition of management into the new structure under this contract? I note that Appendix E gives an option to hire interim management services from Quorum. What plans has the Bartlett board made? What time frames do you have for managing the transition to the new layout?
Assemblyman Keel, through the mayor. Yes, we've already embarked on our transition process, and we have, as you may note, this contract starts on February 1st, so our other contract terminates January 31st, and we, at that point on, lose the services of our current CEO and CFO. We have been interviewing individuals with the looking towards a transition team, interim CEO and CFO to fill the positions for about 6 months. We've also received already a few proposals from executive search teams for our more permanent placement. And so we've already embarked on that part of the process as well, though we will probably be engaging in an RFP to engage that executive search firm too on the immediate basis. But our first step is to place individuals in the interim positions, and we've already identified a number of candidates that are very good potential for those positions, and we are just during this week we expect to complete that process.
Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This may be I'm going to direct this to the Bartlett board members, but perhaps Mr. Hartle needs to help with the answer. If this proposal that you have for us tonight is approved, and at some point down the road here you negotiate a contract with the CEO and CFO, are those contracts subject to approval by the Assembly?
Mr. Hartle?
Through the mayor to Mr. Wanamaker, no, they wouldn't be. The Bartlett board is, under our charter and the ordinances, empowered to run the hospital, including any contracts necessary to do so.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you for your testimony. Let me ask at this point whether there is objection to approval of the consulting services contract proposed between the city and borough and Quorum Health.
Objection.
We have an objection. Madam Clerk, if you call the roll, please. Question before the body is, shall the consulting services contract be approved?
Mr. Mayor, before we begin, I'd like to speak to my objection.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My objection stems from the fact that the previous model worked well for this community. The people that served in those capacities were valued members of the community and provided good service for the community. We only have to look at the quality of care that Bartlett provides to this community and the advancements it's made through the years with the assistance of the board and the management teams to understand that that model has worked, and I see insufficient reason to justify this significant change. There are different models. This one has worked, and I don't see the need to change it. That's the basis for my objection. Thank you.
Further discussion? If not, Madam Clerk, if you would again proceed to the vote.
Mr. Wanamaker?
No.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mayor Botello?
Yes.
Motion carries.
That brings us next on our agenda to staff reports. Again, you'll note in the packet the dates tied to the October 2nd, 2012 municipal election. Are there any questions that you'd like to direct towards the clerk with regard to that calendar? If not, Mr. Manager, any staff reports?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Hartle.
If I could, Mr. Mayor, I've been asked by a few people about the status of our ordinances with respect to fireworks. And the members that were here remember that last summer we adopted an ordinance which I believe clearly prohibits the sale of fireworks within the city and borough. Prior to adoption of that ordinance, it's my opinion that the code was very unclear. There are three different codes that overlapping, and there's the state statute, there's also state regulations, then there's the International Fire Code, then there's the CBJ amendments to the International Fire Code, which adopted part of the state statutes into the fire code. The net effect of all that was that there was no clear prohibition on the use or possession of fireworks, and that, or at least not such that we could enforce a ticket in court. Because, as I've said before, these type of quasi-criminal ordinances have to be read in a way that's most favorable to someone charged with an infraction, which is what they are. So that when we adopted the ordinance, which clearly prohibits sale, we repealed the kind of jumble of ordinances with respect to use and possession. So that's the state of the law today. There's no code on it at all. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Hartle. Are there any questions? If not, we move next to committee reports. I will begin with the Human Resources Committee. Ms. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met this evening at 5:15 for an early beginning to our regular HRC meeting. Today we discussed at length the recommended revisions of the commercial vehicle regulations. A companion ordinance is being revised now and will be introduced at our next meeting.
Thank you. That brings us next to Lands and Resources, Ms. Becker.
No report.
We move next to Finance.
Just a reminder that there is a Finance Committee meeting on Wednesday.
And again, for Standing Committee reports, Mr. Wanamaker and Public Works and Facilities.
No report tonight, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
We have two special committees. As I understand it, Ms. Crane, the special committee working on
the survey.
The survey will be presenting at the Finance Committee on Wednesday evening.
The survey has been prepared, and it will be available to assembly members on Wednesday.
And next, I turn to Mr. Smith, chair of the subcommittee working on the manager selection. If you could share that portion, maybe an update that is appropriate in public, I suspect that there may be some aspects in terms of the questions we intend to ask candidates that will be dealt with in executive session. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The committee, which was comprised of Mr. Wanamaker, myself, and Mary Becker, we held two meetings. We were directed by the Assembly to create alternate processes for the manager interview. For content, initially we identified as many as 20 municipal management functions that we would like to interview the candidates on as a starting point, and then we reduced that number of management categories to 8. The process, as directed by the Assembly, was to become more streamlined and take less management time and less staff time than the previous assessment center method used the last round. The overriding concern that we have was to create a process of fairness, considering we have one internal candidate and one external candidate. And the process we've identified a recommendation would have three primary components. One would be the assembly interview. The second would be a substantial written component. And then the third would be interaction with the public. And the committee's worked pretty extensively with Mila, and we would be prepared maybe to have her walk us through this process in executive session.
Thank you. With that, we'll have that discussion in accordance with our agenda, which provides for the executive session at the bottom of our business tonight. So I move next to liaison reports. I begin with Mr. Wanamaker.
No report tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Mayor, the Planning Commission at its last scheduled meeting had requested, when I had asked them to identify a potential date for a meeting with the Assembly to talk about goals that we're working on together. And I don't have a specific date from them, but I just wanted to express that they do have an interest in meeting with the Assembly as a whole, talk about goals, mutual goals for the year.
Mr. Keel.
Nothing tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Carter.
Just a brief report on Eagle Crest. The early opening this year and the outstanding conditions. Revenues are up the highest point this time of year that they've been since 2007. Revenues are up. New record with season pass sales. And expenses are down slightly. So good report from Eagle Crest.
With that, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Docks and Harbors did send their passenger fee funding request list to the city manager. That request is approximately $3 million. The Christmas boat lighting contest was very successful. That was a joint program with the Yacht Club and the Chamber of Commerce, and there were $1,270 of prize money given to six boats who decorated and took part in the contest. The governor has put in his budget a $2 million appropriation for Aurora Harbor in the fiscal year 13 budget. Legislature has to approve it, of course. The Sustainability Committee met, and they're talking about sustainability indicators, working on energy, and did come up with some. They will be submitting those to the Assembly when they are finished. The Alaska Committee, the legislative reception is January 18th from 5 to 6:30 at Centennial Hall. And the annual meeting is 21st of January at the Travel Lodge at 9 o'clock in the morning. And the next meeting is this Wednesday at 7 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Two committees to report on. The LEPC, that's Local Emergency Preparedness Committee, will meet this Wednesday, January 11th at noon at Bartlett Regional Hospital. For Juneau International Airport Board, they will also be meeting on Wednesday, January 11th at 6 p.m. in the Alaska Room at the airport. I think it's important for us for the public to get an opportunity to know what's going to be discussed so that they can decide whether or not they wish to participate in the public process. So things that are going to be on that coming agenda. It's interesting to note that the runway safety area, phase one, which also includes the site preparation for the snow removal equipment facility, is 94% complete. There will be a report from the engineer, the airport engineer, and also the airport architect on various aspects of the infrastructure for that facility, as well as remodeling, for continuing on the remodeling for the entrance, the main entrance of the airport. Additionally, the airport board is particularly interested in looking more closely at what has been called the north wing of the airport. It's actually more than just the north wing, because there's some stuff on the second floor that sort of is over top of the new part. But the older parts of the airport are actually built in 1947 through 1984. That facility is well outlived its useful life, and so they're examining proposals. They will be having a special committee of the whole meeting to review the proposals for changes to that older portion of the airport on January 17th at 6 p.m. It's, of course, open to the public. And something that I just want to mention you might notice when you go to the airport, in that older north wing, they've deepened the what they call vestibules. I call it Arctic entrance. You know how there's one door opens and then a second door that opens? They've deepened those. If you go there and you think, what are they doing? This seems like a waste of space. The truth is, it's now timed so that one door will open, you come in, it closes, and you can keep walking before the next one opens. And it actually is going to save a lot in terms of energy waste, according to their consultants. So that's a good thing, and they're working hard to make the best they can of the resources that they have. So that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
With that, we move to Assembly comments and questions. Mr. Wanamaker.
None tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Smith.
No comment tonight.
Mr. Keel.
Not tonight, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Mr. Dibdahl.
I just wanted to say the business of the smoking out on the street, and that Mr. Patterson came earlier. We moved the problem, and maybe there have been some unintended consequences, and I don't know how we get to it, but I did think at the time we addressed this whole matter that we didn't maybe give enough consideration to those folks who are willing to build enclosed smoking areas that smoke could be filtered. Thank you.
Ms. Crane.
Nothing this evening.
Ms. Becker.
Nothing. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do want to comment on the chronic inebriate issue. The Human Resources Committee has been sort of assigned to address that issue, and we've all been sort of, I think the entire assembly has been knocking around looking for solutions. It's a difficult problem to get your arms around. And I just wanted to report that I've sort of got a three-pronged approach going this week. Next week there's a meeting at the Juno Homelessness Coalition on Wednesday, January 11th. Seems like I have a lot going on Wednesday, January 11th. I did a walk around with Officer Penrose on December 28th. He's the downtown officer, and I got to see him in action, and I will be doing the same again on January 13th. It's Friday the 13th, so wish me luck. 1:30, I'll be doing that with him. That's going to be enlightening. I think I'll get to understand the problem a little bit more. And then the third is that I met with Dr. Carolyn Brown. I know that Carlton Smith did as well. She's particularly interested in finding out what Juno's role should be. What if any role should Juno have in public health, including the spread of communicable diseases, alcohol and drug abuse, and resulting chronic abuse, violence, and criminal activities? The Human Resources Committee this evening agreed to invite various members of the community to meet with us at a future HRC meeting to try and really get our hands around this issue. It's a challenging one.
It is indeed. I have two matters. The city manager has prepared a list of proposed funding requests to the state for our review, and I'd like to distribute it now, and my request would be, Ms. Crane, as chair of the Finance Committee, if you could add this to the agenda for the Wednesday night meeting, with the goal of identifying which projects we wish to submit. We could submit all of them, but also to identify the priority of those projects. And also like to reiterate the legislative reception to the Alaska Legislature, which will take place on Wednesday the 19th, and our chance to welcome both the legislature and the Parnell administration again to Juneau and encourage all of our citizens to take part. With that, let me ask again, are there any additional comments or questions?
That was Mr. Dibdahl. That was the 18th. You said the 19th.
Did I say the 19th? Wednesday the 18th. I apologize. Today's the 9th. So much for my math. With that, we have next before us the executive session, the purpose of which is to review the questions and strategies with regard to the interview of the candidates for city manager, a topic which I believe satisfies the open meetings requirements for executive session. I turn to Mr. Hartle to confirm.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I believe it does. The assembly will be discussing the selection materials and as a matter of basic fairness and to have a proper selection process. I believe the assembly wouldn't want those materials to go to the candidates or either of the candidates. And that would fall under matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the public entity. CBJ.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to comment on the propriety of this executive session? If not, public participation is closed. Is there objection or discussion on the assembly? Hearing none, we'll take a brief recess to clear the chambers and it's, yes, the 5 minute to clear the chambers.